Series as a succession of sermons on a particular theme. We've got various interruptions between now and Christmas with a Christingle service and a Remembrance Sunday and so on. So rather than have a sequence, we're just having a series of sermons. And our theme is questions that Jesus asked. I was astonished to discover there are over 300 of them recorded in the Gospels. We won't be doing them all. We're just going to be doing a handful of them. And the question that we're focusing on this morning is Jesus saying to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Why are you so afraid?" I remember the first television set that we had as a family. It was black and white, of course. Yes, I am that old. It had just 4 or 5 channel buttons. Of course, we only ever used 2 of them until, was it Eric and Ernie moved to ITV? Then we were allowed to use the 3rd button. And just had a brightness control and a contrast control, and those were about it. And, of course, I was a boy. I liked playing with buttons, particularly the brightness and contrast knobs, turning up to see how bright it would go and how much contrast we could get. And this is a story of contrasts and brightness. The contrasts are astonishing. The knob is turned up to the maximum. We see Jesus asleep, but the disciples probably more awake than they've ever been. We see Jesus saying, "Peace." We see the disciples crying, "We're dying." We see a great windstorm, then a complete absence of wind. We see the waves breaking over the boat, and then a great calm. We see the elements recognizing Jesus' authority, but his disciples' puzzlement as to his identity. We see the disciples' fear of the storm, but their great fear of Jesus. It's a story of great contrasts. But as far as the brightness of the disciples is concerned, that knob's turned down to the minimum. Jesus says, "Why are you so afraid?" So how are we to read this story? There are 2 ways, 2 very contrasting ways. We can read it at face value. We can read it as a real event in Jesus' life. He really did calm that storm with just a few words. No matter how extraordinary it is, how extraordinary it seems, that's what happened. Or we can read it as an allegory. We can read it as a story that was written sometime after Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, a story with a moral to teach us something. It'll be no surprise to you, I trust, that I see this as a true story. But is that a valid view? I might defend it for all I'm worth, but is it a valid view? Well, let's note first of all the details that are in the story. We're given the time of day. Evening had come. We're told that Jesus went just as he was. Someone noticed that he didn't go to shore first. We're told there were other boats with him. Why would those be mentioned if there wasn't an eyewitness recording what he'd seen? The other boats don't make any other point in the story. We see the rebuke from the disciples. Really quite a rude thing they say to him. Would they have added that if it didn't happen? We see the degree of terror and bewilderment in the disciples. We see the detail of Jesus being asleep. Where in the boat? In the stern. What was he sleeping on? The cushion. These are all hallmarks of an eyewitness account. Someone was there and saw and remembered. We might then ask, does the story ring true? Does it hold together? We're told that Jesus had been teaching all day. Evening had come by the time the story starts. And exhausted after the busyness of a day, he wants to get away from the crowd. He's tired, and we'll see just how tired he was. We're told that he went just as he was. The other boats possibly had other people in them who had been listening to him as he preached from this boat. And suddenly this great windstorm arises. Is that odd? Well, not particularly. The Sea of Galilee, which is really just a lake, the surface of it is 600 feet below sea level, and it's surrounded by 2,000-foot high mountains. And when the wind is coming from a certain direction, it's forced between two hills and hits the water, this stream of cold air, and whips it up into these whirlwinds, these great storms. This wasn't an unusual occurrence. They come frequently, they come without warning. And Jesus was asleep on the cushion. Well, we know he was tired from that, don't we? We know that he'd set off without going ashore to eat. He went just as he was. And the cushion, that's a small flat space at the stern of the boat with some kind of padding on it. And this reminds us, doesn't it, that Jesus is fully human. Yes, he's divine, but he's also fully human. He gets tired. This is, in fact, the only time in the Gospels that he is recorded as being asleep. Of course, he slept every night, just as everyone else would. But here, it's important to the story. It's part of how the story hangs together. So he's tired. He's so tired, in fact, that he sleeps through the storm. He sleeps through the storm to the annoyance of the disciples. They're trying to control the boat. They're probably bailing water out. And so they wake him. They're annoyed that he's asleep. They want him to do something. Now, it's often said that actions speak louder than words, but not in this case. Instead of doing something, he uses words. Just a couple of words. Peace. Be still. And the wind ceased. There was a great calm. And at this point, the skeptic might well say, well, hang on, I just can't believe it. Their argument might go something like this. Things like that don't happen. Well, how do you know they don't happen, we might ask. Well, I've never seen a miracle, says the skeptic. Well, does that mean that supernatural events can never happen? Well, nobody's ever seen one, says the skeptic. Well, in fact, around 70% of people in the West believe that these things can happen, things out of the ordinary. Now, they won't all have seen one. Let's say just 1% have seen one. Well, that's 70 million people who are alive today have seen a miracle, or so they believe. They're wrong, says the skeptic. What, all 70 million of them? Yes, the laws of nature never change, says the skeptic. Well, that, we say, is a statement of faith. And I put my faith in the one who wrote the laws of nature. Now, whether we see this as believable or not depends on our view of Jesus. If Jesus was just a man asleep in the stern of that fishing boat, then, yeah, it's a pretty unlikely story. But if he is the Son of God, well, that changes things. We read just a few weeks ago, as we started our series of studies in Paul's letter to the Colossians, back in chapter 1, verse 16, we read this, "For by him, that is Jesus the Christ, all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him." If the person in the boat is the person by whom, for whom, through whom all things were created, well then, if he says to one of those things that he's created, peace, and says to another of them, be still, it's no longer surprising that they obeyed his voice. Indeed, it would have been rather more surprising if they hadn't obeyed. Can we treat this as a reliable account of an historical event? I think so. So what do the disciples learn from this experience? We've looked at the facts of the story. Let's now look at the interaction between Jesus and his disciples. Before we get to the question, why are you so afraid? We see the disciples' reaction to the power of the storm, and that is fear. Great fear. Even though many of them certainly were experienced fishermen, they were experienced with this lake, they were probably in a boat belonging to one of them, they were still fearful of this storm, though they were used to the storms. But see what happens? The great power of the storm succumbs to a greater power. The disciples' fear of the power of the storm gives way to a great fear, verse 41, of the greater power of Jesus. As the disciples' reaction, we see too Jesus' disappointment with them. And here we come to our question. Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? Why is Jesus disappointed with them? Well, it's not just they haven't grasped who he is. They've seen his power. They've seen authority demonstrated in various ways up to this point. It's not just that. It's also that they are forgetting the lessons they've learned in Sunday school. Go back 50 years, many children were taught Bible stories in Sunday school. That might have been your experience. It might not have been. But the disciples were all good Jewish boys. They would have been at their version of Sunday school. They would have learned the scriptures, much of it from memory. They would have sung psalms together. And one psalm they would have sung is number 107. You might like to turn to it. It's on page 507 in the Bibles. Page 507. Let me read from verse 23, about halfway down the left-hand column on page 507. Some went out to the sea in ships, doing business on the great waters. They saw the deeds of the Lord, his wondrous works in the deep. For he commanded and raised the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They mounted up to heaven. They went down to the depths. Their courage melted away in their evil plight. They reeled and staggered like drunken men and were at their wits' end. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress. He made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. Then they were glad that the waters were quiet, and he brought them to their desired haven. Now, those words could have been written by the disciples when they were in the pub later that night, having got safely to the other side of the lake. But they weren't. They were written 1,000 years before. And so, in the middle of this storm, the disciples should have been saying to one another, "This is just like that psalm we used to sing at Sunday school. You remember that story of what God did in the storm, how he calmed it? Here's a man doing the same thing as God does. Maybe he has God's power." That's what we think they perhaps ought to have been thinking. But we might say, well, surely the disciples were more concerned with staying alive, with surviving the storm, than thinking about God. Well, maybe. But if they had stopped to think about God, they would have realized that they didn't need to do anything. nor did they need Jesus to do anything. Because if they'd thought of God, they would have realized that the fact Jesus was with them meant that they were safe. They were safe because of who Jesus is, not because of what he does. And it's easy to criticize the disciples, but isn't that exactly what we do? A crisis comes along, a storm blows up, we get stressed, we devote all our energy to solving the crisis, we're bailing the water out for all we're worth, we're trying to regain control of the situation. God is the last thing on our minds. In fact, he should be the first. We say we trust God, but when a situation arises when we need to exercise that trust, to put it into action, what do? We put trust in ourselves. Why are you so afraid? And at this point, having grasped that, it becomes safe to start to draw lessons for ourselves. What are the lessons for us in this story? We could stay at the Sunday school level and say, well, it's just a nice story. There's trouble and Jesus deals with it. It means we must try to trust Jesus more. That's the Sunday school answer. And if we're in Sunday school, then fair enough. But there's more to this. There's much more to this. And indeed, this is what Jesus is saying to his disciples, isn't it? Why are you so afraid? You were at Sunday school, you learned the lesson from that psalm, and yet you haven't learned it, have you? Or you wouldn't be saying, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? Do you see the difference? If it's a nice story, then it means this. It means putting ourselves in the same boat as the disciples. Knowing we should trust Jesus, but having no basis for that trust. It's a blind faith. And so when a storm comes along, we join in with the disciples' complaint. Teacher, don't you care that we are perishing? Teacher, don't you care that my child is ill? Teacher, don't you care that my marriage is falling apart? Teacher, don't you care that my friends have all abandoned me? Teacher, don't you care that I have no money? Teacher, don't you care that I feel so alone? Teacher, don't you care that I want to give up? Teacher, don't you care that my husband has died? Teacher, don't you care that I lost my job? Why are you so afraid? If we stop to think about what this story actually teaches, then we can learn to do what the disciples failed to do. We can see Jesus for who he is. We see that he calmed the storm not because he's Spider-Man or Superman with special powers, but because he is the one with authority. He created those elements, and so he controls the elements. As we sang a little while ago, the waters and the land are in the hollow of his hand. He has authority to bend the laws of nature because he wrote them. Once we've understood that, then we can see that our faith can grow up. It's no longer a blind faith, a Sunday school faith, but a faith based on the evidence of who Jesus is. We can see that we don't need to try to seize control of a situation or even to demand action from Jesus. His presence becomes enough. as we walk with him and he walks with us. The disciples had faith enough to wake Jesus in expectation that he could do something, but they didn't have enough faith to accept that he didn't need to do anything. They didn't need to wake him up. They were perfectly safe even while he was asleep. Why are you so afraid? And from there, it's just a small step to what I think is the heart of the lesson here. And we find the stepping stone, if you like, right at the beginning of the passage, when we ask ourselves, whose idea was this boat trip? Whose fault is it? Well, verse 5 tells us, on that day when evening had come, Jesus said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." It was Jesus' idea to get to stay in the boat and cross the lake. Did he not know there was a storm coming? Of course he did. Did he then deliberately put his disciples' lives in danger? His disciples' lives were never in danger. He was with them. They asked him, "Do you not care?" And his unspoken answer is surely, "I care too much about you. I care too much about you to allow you to miss this experience. You need this storm. You need to trust not what I can do, but who I am. You need to be able to say with David, remember from your Sunday school, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." You need to understand that I won't remove the valley. You need to understand that the evil is real and present. But most importantly, you need to learn that I am with you. Why are you so afraid? I wonder where you are this morning. Maybe you're at Sunday school. Maybe your Christian faith is very new. You need to learn this lesson, or you won't make it to the first storm. The first gust of wind will leave your boat filling with water, crying out, "Teacher, do you not care?" Maybe you're in the first part of the boat ride on that calm evening as the sun sets. Then you need to know that there is a storm coming, but that the one who died for you knows about the storm and cares about you so much that he won't make the storm go away. He will be with you through it. Maybe you are right now in the middle of one of those storms. Maybe the boat is filling with water. Then hear him say, "Why are you so afraid? I took your transgressions. By my wounds you are healed. All your iniquities have been laid on me. And I went like a sheep to the slaughter for you. Trust me. Don't trust me for what I can do, but for who I am, your Savior and your Lord."